Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. This is Natalie.
This is Judy.
Nice.
And this is NPR.
Who are you calling a nice girl?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Not So Nice Girl. I have my dear friend Judy McDonald from my PhD program as well, except for she is on the clinical side. So she will one day be helping people individually.
Hopefully. We'll see what happens.
Well, we got to graduate.
3 years.
Yeah. Yeah. But. In like a decade. And she is actually my first in-person guest,
so
not
excited.
Over Zoom. Love it's
it.
Crazy that we have those these days.
Yeah.
So cheers.
Cheers.
We
Sláinte.
Have some. What?
Sláinte. You know, I don't know if it's, I think it might be an Irish cheers.
Okay.
My mom says it all the time.
All right.
Shout out mom.
I always say salute. Shout out mom.
Salute.
Oh, mom and dad. That's Italian heritage.
Mm-hmm.
Well, today, so why I brought Judy on with me is we talk about my podcast and we talk about tons of things in class and all of that fun stuff. And one thing when we were discussing kind of what it's like to be a nice girl was this idea of kind of the aftermath. So I've talked a lot about being a nice girl, what that means, what that looks like. And I'm, you know, harping on all of you guys and myself to break free from it, mm-hmm. to not be a nice girl. But there's a whole second half of that. That is pretty scary, honestly.
Yeah.
When you aren't a nice girl, when you aren't living for other people, you have to live for yourself. And that, for a lot of us, is really uncomfortable. So we kind of talked about this almost identity crisis that you go through and reforming of your identity, mm-hmm. once you realize you don't have to live for other people. And we've done the research, we have our own experiences, but that's kind of what we're going to talk about today is, okay, you want to be a recovering nice girl? What now? What now? And to be perfectly honest, do we fully know the answer? No. But that's why we're here doing research. Mm-hmm. That's why we're here sharing our stories, telling you what works, what doesn't work.
Yeah.
So hopefully when you guys either get there, or if you're already there, you can kind of go in with it with a bit more information, a bit more knowledge to feed your soul, honestly.
Yeah. And so people feel less alone in the struggle of finding out who you are, because it's not easy.
Well, and especially we're both in our mid-20s.
Yeah.
I know people are just now talking about that quarter life crisis,
mm-hmm.
but I feel like that's a pretty new topic.
I feel like I went through it 2 years ago.
Yeah. I feel like I'm still in it.
So. I'm still in it, for sure.
But I did also start 2 years ago. I've just consistently remained in it. But it's kind of a new phenomenon because everyone else thinks you go through these crises when you're in high school, mm-hmm. when you're in college deciding what you want to do. But sometimes you have started working or are in between school. For us, I was working, you were working as well, I
mm-hmm,
believe,
mm-hmm.
Waiting to go back to school. And I feel like that's when you start really reevaluating and really questioning a lot about yourself and a lot of what you want out of life.
Yeah. I feel like, I mean, bring in the psych research, right? Because that's
always.
Sort of, it's
always.
Our background here. The state of like emerging adulthood.
Yeah.
Became like, it starts so much earlier than it used to. It's not mm-hmm. like back in the day where our parents like graduate from college, move out immediately, can pay rent, can pay for their food. Like, they kind of, I think it happened a lot earlier, identity formation for generations that came before us.
And it had to.
It had to. And it was the way that the society, right? Society was set up. And these days, it's just not the case. I think people need to understand that emerging adulthood, it's a much longer period of development. And so it makes sense that people are still figuring out who they are, even through their mid to late 20s.
Yeah.
People think they're supposed to have it figured out, and that's just really not the case. And it's even more not the case these days.
Yeah. And I think for those of you, because this is a term that honestly, I had been in the psych world for a while and I really only heard it this past year. It's a new term. If you haven't heard emerging adulthood, you may have heard it as young adults or, you know, various different terms, but now it's an official recognized term in psychology, but people are still questioning it, still a lot of debate about it. And I think it's because we all don't really know where society is right now. We all don't really know, like, what is the normal trajectory for someone. And to be in your 20s and the field of psychology itself doesn't even know, like, what to do with you. If you're supposed to be married, if you're supposed to be having kids, if you're supposed to be forming a career, if you're supposed to just be fucking living your life.
Yeah.
There's no guidance there.
Yeah.
And that's a really, especially for a nice girl that like you want to follow the rules and there are no real rules to follow.
Yeah.
That's terrifying.
Absolutely. It reminds me a little bit of like the meme where it's, my friend told me that they're having a baby and I'm not sure whether to say congratulations or I'm sorry.
I literally brought that up to my friend the other day. Like you don't really know like where you even are. If I get called an adult, I'm like, am I?
Or ma'am.
Yeah. That we're both TAs too. Mm-hmm. So when I get like a professor of Volpicelli, I'm like, absolutely not. Do not. It's call me Nat. Call me Natty Light. Call me anything.
Me trying to be cool with the students.
Literally.
Call me Natty Light.
I'm like, I'm just one of you. And they're like, no, you're not. You've had a 401k.
They're like deer in headlights, honestly. They don't know what's going on.
Yeah, exactly.
And we have COVID to thank for that part, you know, in part. Talking about identity formation, the number that did on us.
Yeah.
For God's sakes.
I have heard a joke that you're actually like 2 years younger than your actual age because of COVID.
I'm still 21.
I would love to say.
It's 5 years for me.
I was about to say, I was like, Judy, I know your math is better than that.
I'm 26, everybody.
I am also 26. 2 years ago was not 21, but mentally I wish I was there. And not knowing that me drinking two glasses of wine will mean I will have a hangover tomorrow.
Oh my goodness.
Whatever, let's just do it.
Drink water
between. Again, cheers to that.
Cheers. But really, though, I think part of like the reason I'm so excited to come on today was when we initially sat down to like sort of plan ideas for what to talk about. We're kind of like throwing ideas off one another. And the thing that stuck was, I don't really know like what I like.
Yeah.
I don't know what my interests are as much as I used to. I don't know. I don't know what it is about emerging adulthood, these years of like 18 to 20, like mid 20s to like kind of late 20s.
Yeah.
That you start to realize how much you tried to please others. And this you talk about a lot on your show, your podcast, where you do a lot for others.
Yeah.
Right. And you don't think so much about yourself. And when you do that, you're kind of putting your own identity formation on the wayside.
Yeah.
So.
It's a tricky thing to even come to grasp too, because when you think about a people pleaser, you think of someone who puts other people first in terms of actions. So, you know, maybe they will overextend themselves a bit too much. And a lot of that is super true. That is very much a part of being a nice girl, of being a people pleaser. But something, I talked about it on my first episode, but something that I had to come to terms with that I was really ashamed of was growing up, I feel like I had a different personality for every single person I talked to.
Like a chameleon.
I was absolutely a chameleon. Yeah. So what I liked, what I enjoyed, what I did, how I spoke, how I even held myself was so different depending on the person or the group that I was with. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, you're just constantly acting for what, however the person in front of you wants you to act. And that's a whole other side that I don't think is spoken enough about people pleasers, because people are just kind of like, they're quick to write it off as like, oh, you just are very helpful.
Yeah.
And it's so much deeper, especially when you get to emerging adulthood and you feel like you need to start making these decisions and you have no basis.
Yeah.
None whatsoever.
Yeah. I remember the first time that I sort of, I think, put my own identity to the wayside. And I would love to hear if you have like a memory of like an early time that this happened for you. I have this really great friend, Jacqueline. Jacqueline, if you're out there listening, love you. we've been friends like since we were in kindergarten, and she's really tomboyish. Mm-hmm. And we were really close. And so she would like get her hair cut short. I know tomboy is like, you know, a controversial word these days, but bear with me.
But back and then, that was
back
what
then
we
that was
it.
The term. That was the term. Yes. And she would wear like really baggy clothes, her basketball shorts like past her knees, and sneakers. Mm-hmm. And I always like kind of was drawn to the girly stuff, but I loved her so much and I really wanted to be like her and I admired her. And so I imitated her. Yeah. Got my hair cut in the same way. We looked like little twins. And was that necessarily the way I would have dressed or acted if she weren't there? Probably not. And is that bad, right? So at that age, who knows? Jury's out. But I think as you get older, it can start to take a toll.
Yeah, and I think where, and we've talked about this, where it draws the line, because I'm thinking as well. I mean, there were tons of things as a kid. Mm-hmm. You know, I would say this as a kid a lot of like someone, and I talked to my therapist about it too, because I was like, I just lie. Like someone will say, oh, I really like this movie. And I'll just say, I love that movie. I haven't fucking seen the movie. Like, I'll just be like, yeah, no, the movie was so, so good. And they'll be like, what is your favorite part? And you're just like, I was just trying to please you. Like, you were just so excited. Yeah. I wanted to be excited with you. Right. And it's nothing malicious. It's nothing bad. But like, as a kid, I would do that a lot. Or I feel like I wanted to connect with someone, so I just agree with them about things. And I feel like as a kid, especially, and I mean, who didn't like feel the pressure to like wear the Hollister things or wear whatever was in style?
Had, like, the sugar lips that were like buttery tank tops, Juicy Couture,
layered. Oh my gosh, that is part of, I feel like, growing up, and that's part of, you're experimenting, you're trying to find your identity by copying other people, seeing what fits, what doesn't fit. And where it becomes an issue is when that doesn't stop. That you don't end up picking and choosing. And I feel like I got to my point in my 20s, honestly, like only a couple years ago, where I was like, I am truly still acting like a kid, where I'll dress a certain way around these people, I'll act a certain way around these people, but never will I just wear something and be like, I like how this looks.
Yeah.
Or say something and say, I felt comfortable to say that out loud. So I'm going to say it. And that's where I think it starts to become the issue, because exploring as a kid and all of that is normal. But when you really lose sight, and there isn't a true Natalie, like that's the thing, is that there wasn't a true Natalie.
Yeah.
I didn't know which one felt right because I was so used to switching.
Yeah. And it's exhausting.
Oh, my gosh.
Not to mention, right?
Yeah.
Like, the cognitive toll it takes to, yeah, to just, like, influence your personality based on the setting, based on the context. It's really, and it starts to become more unconscious. Like, you don't have to think about it so much, but it's still there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, and you still, I think, for nice girls, for people pleasers, when you're constantly reading other people, you still have that knee-jerk reaction of, oh, they didn't like that.
Yeah.
And trying to remind yourself, like, that's okay. Mm-hmm. That's okay if they wouldn't wear my outfit or they wouldn't have talked openly about this.
Yeah.
They can still respect me and like me despite me not being identical mm-hmm. to them. And that's something that I think was a very hard lesson to learn.
I think it really starts showing up during like major life transitions too.
Oh yeah.
Like when you're moving from high school to college and you're sort of transplanted into a new group and a new community mm-hmm. or even like post-grad to a PhD program where you're in a cohort with a lot of people who, or maybe not a lot of people, right? But people who are coming from all different backgrounds who you're not going to be similar to in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And figuring out, you know, like where your place is there.
And a lot of that requires you to be certain on where you are now. Mm-hmm. And it's very bizarre going into it not being certain and having to figure out your place as you go.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you said, it's just exhausting.
It is. Yeah.
When there's so many other things to focus on and worry about, like that isn't your whole life like it was kind of as a teen, you know?
Yeah. And I think it, of course, like even goes beyond just, you know, clothes that you're wearing or the way that you talk, the way that you behave around people. But it could be like what you're passionate about, mm-hmm. Religion, spirituality, sexuality, like really big parts of people's identity and identity development that you might push the wayside and compromise on to please others or to fit in with the crowd. And to a certain extent, I think sometimes it's a superpower to be able to be a chameleon and to make people like you. But it's like, to what extent? At what point does it become bad? Like maladaptive, negative.
Exactly.
Preventing you from reaching your full potential.
Yeah. If you're never fully analyzing them of how you feel because mm-hmm. you're constantly analyzing it in response to someone else, mm-hmm. you're never going to reach your identity. You're never going to say, this feels good, this feels bad. And in a lot mm-hmm. of ways, it almost is a decision paralysis where you are so scared to stick to something because you think, and I was like this as well, you think, if I say one thing, I can never change.
Yeah.
Or if I say one thing and one person dislikes me, then it's over.
Right.
And you have to start to get over that, which is a whole other battle.
The clinical psychologist in me is coming out right now, and I'm like thinking about acceptance and commitment therapy. I'm literally like, why am I thinking about ACT right now? Acceptance and commitment therapy, AKA
because I
ACT.
Probably need it.
But me too, girl. Me too. But I mean, I think that a lot of it too is like you don't know what your values are. You don't know, like, there's no compass that's like pointing you in the right direction if you don't know who you are or what
you
value.
And that's how you live your life.
Yeah.
So if you don't have that, you are just running in limbo.
Limbo is a good way to put it.
Yeah. It's just truly like floating in space.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what direction that you're going to go next mm-hmm. until someone else tells you. And that's a very stressful. People don't like the unknown.
Yeah. And, oh my God, people hate the unknown.
Yeah. And to think that nice girls or people pleasers, that's how they basically live every interaction.
Mm-hmm.
Not knowing basically what they're going to say, how they're going to act.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's going to change from context to context. It's just you're living in limbo
mm-hmm.
and you're so busy moving mm-hmm. you don't ever take the time to sit, or you don't want to. I mean, for me, I didn't want to sit and think about it.
What, if you don't mind me asking, was there like a moment for you where you were like, I'm done being a nice girl? Or was it gradual?
I think it was gradual, but therapy was definitely very helpful. Highly recommend it from two psychologists. It was, in a way, kind of, I chipped away at it where I would notice different patterns of behaviors that I didn't like, and usually when an incident would come up. So like in my relationship, asking for what I need, felt very uncomfortable. So learning how to do that, and then learning that that would usually lead it to better results than worse results. Mm-hmm. And that with my family, kind of standing my ground a bit more around them was kind of my practice. Mm-hmm. And I think I was really, really religious. So breaking away from this idea that there's this black and white, good versus evil, there's a gray area. Mm-hmm. And understanding that the world isn't going to end just because one person maybe isn't your best friend, or you mess up in some way. Mm-hmm. I think it was a lot of, unfortunately for me, forced. I wish I had, honestly, part of the reason I made this podcast is I wish I had something like this that I could hear. Mm-hmm. Before it got to a point that I couldn't return. And when I had my eating disorder, mm-hmm. that was a point that, like, we gotta stop being a perfectionist. We've gotta stop living for other people.
Yeah.
And I wish that I made that decision earlier, but you know, you can't.
That's life.
That's showbiz.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was definitely a gradual process, I think, for me, because it had to be. Like, I couldn't just change mm-hmm. everything all at once.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. What about you?
I know, I'm thinking about it now, because I'm like, I asked this question to you, but did I have a response? I think it was also gradual. I think as I've been in this stage of adulthood, like early adulthood, living independently, like figuring out, like moving to a new city and figuring out like who I get along with, what I like to do. It's forced me, again, like you're kind of talking about, like there are scenarios in which you're kind of forced to figure out, like, who am I? What do I want? Does this feel good for me? When you talk about like your eating disorder, I'm like, maybe like a manifestation of your desire to please others and to conform to society standards, right?
Absolutely.
And I think you made a good point saying sort of like, well, it's not the end of the world if someone doesn't like me, but it feels like it.
It does.
It's like coming to the realization that not everyone's going to like you, for me, has always been really difficult. I think there was like a moment recently where I realized maybe how much of a people pleaser I am. And it was when I was with my ex-boyfriend. As it always is. And
it's always the relationships.
He wasn't great, but he did have some like pretty astute observations. And he said to me one time, like, wow, like, Judy, is there anyone like who doesn't like you? Like, you're so likable. Who doesn't like you? And I'm like, holy shit. Like, there are people who don't like me, but it's not that many. And is it because I'm so great, or is it because like I am a chameleon?
Yeah.
And I act differently around different people. And I think that when you start to realize all of these different traits that you take on, like you feel yourself and like can sit outside yourself and like recognize that you're acting differently based on whatever situation you're in, it can be scary.
Yeah.
It can be disorienting.
It really, like, is a disorienting, like it's almost like you're watching yourself being like, what the fuck am I doing?
It's like, I'm not on psychedelics, but I am outside of my body right now, and I'm looking at what I'm doing.
And I don't
I don't like this feeling. And yeah, so I think that sort of, that was a gradual realization. When people tell me things like that, it's also like, oh, wow, this is a thing that people are picking up on. And while it's great that, you know, I'm quote unquote likable, is likable what I'm striving for?
Well, it's also, you could be likable, mm-hmm. but what do they like about you?
Right.
are they liking you? Like, that's what I think I started to realize was people weren't necessarily liking me for me. They were liking me for whatever act I was putting on for them.
They were liking you because you made them feel
comfortable. Them feel good. Yes. And that is where I truly had one of those mind fuck epiphany moments where I was like, holy shit, I really am living my life to make everyone else feel better about themselves. Yeah. And I think recently, and I would love to do an episode about this. I haven't really talked about it much, but I recently did have like a friend breakup that I've told you about. Yeah. And it happened while my dad was in the hospital and my dad was dying. And I started to really realize it was one of those moments that I finally stood up for myself to say, this is what I want to do. This is what I've always wanted to do. I'm going to be me. I'm going to be real. I'm going to be who I want to be. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't what people were used to hearing from me. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't what people expected to hear from me. And that really threw people off. And I spent months grappling with that.
Yeah.
And a long time wasting my energy on trying to reconcile that rather than focusing on my dad. Mm. And I think that was a very poignant moment for me, especially as I was doing this podcast and talking about like, stand up for yourself, stand up for yourself. And I started seeing the cracks in my surface. And to be clear, everything I say, like, I'm a work in progress. Like, yeah. I'm not saying that I do this 100%.
Yeah.
These are just things that I'm learning. Mm-hmm. But I think that friend breakup and seeing how negatively someone reacted to me simply standing up for myself, because it was so unexpected for me to do that, was very eye-opening. Because I was like, how long have I been letting people do this to me? How long have I been letting people get used to me being a doormat, get used to me following along what they like, following along with how they're behaving? And that's just not how I want to live my life, is having a social life planned out by someone else, having a whole life, basically. I just cleaned out my closet and there were so many pieces that I was like, I hate this piece. I don't know why I bought this. This is not me.
Yeah.
And my friend who was helping me clean out was like, this looks exactly like your old friend group, something they would wear. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I bought this because I wanted to fit in. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it changes your whole psyche of who you think you are because you are living for someone else.
Yeah. And those moments are so hard, like gut-wrenching. I think friend breakups, romantic breakups.
I swear to God, sometimes friend breakups are worse than romantic.
I haven't had many, but I've heard.
I've had only like, well, maybe, Judy, it's because you keep people pleasing.
I think.
Because I've had a lot recently. This is part of it. I've been weaning people out of my life that don't serve me.
Yeah.
And it's not a personal attack. It's a you don't serve me anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think that was part of my friendship episode when I was saying, like, you served your purpose. We both aren't good for each other anymore.
Yep.
We don't need to be friends. We don't align anymore. Mm-hmm. But I had a great time for that moment.
You were there when I needed it.
Exactly. And that's something that is very hard for me to actually reconcile from almost a selfish point of view, that someone doesn't need me all the time, that someone can move on and not need me.
It's a hard realization to grapple with. Same. I mean, that's like really the basis of breakups, whether they be platonic or romantic, is this person isn't in your life anymore. they either don't want to be, something didn't work out, but they're living without you.
Yeah.
And they have to be okay with it. They have to accept it. And I think what, like, a lot of what I'm hearing, I got so excited before because I'm like, we can bring in a psych term.
Yes.
But when I was reading, I was like doing some research. Eric Erickson, shout out Eric Erickson, psychologist.
As a human developer, a developmental psychologist. What?
Yes. That's what you do, Natalie. Yes. Natalie is our developmental psychologist.
I develop humans. Mm-hmm.
But I was reading some research that was like looking at a lot of his theories. And one of the things they were talking about is this idea of like the status quo and how it plays a role in identity formation. And people who are better at removing themselves from the status quo are much better at achieving fuller identity formation.
Yeah.
So these breakups, it sounds so cliche, but it's like breakups are breakthroughs. You're removing yourself from the status quo. You're learning a lot about yourself through these hard, like, experiences. And really, you come out on the other side much of the time better, as long as you have the right social support in place and you have other things in your life that can build you up.
Yeah. No, it is very interesting to, again, as a people pleaser, as a nice girl where you don't want conflict and you're willing to make anything work, and you view these sometimes as you failed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people say that a lot in divorces. People say that a lot in any type of, you know, separation, maybe a job too, that they failed. They feel like, I've been listening to a podcast too with Julie Bowen, and I'm forgetting the other person's name. Sorry. But it's called, sorry, other person, I'll get the name. you're still cool. But it's called Quitters, and how they view like quitting as such a negative thing.
What is the Taylor Swift song? I'm blanking out. You know when it's time to go. From Evermore. Sometimes giving up is the strong thing.
Yes.
Sometimes moving on is the, what, you know.
Right, you guys, is it Taylor, right where you left me?
I don't think so. It's like time to go or something like that. It's on Evermore. But it's all about that idea, right? Of like,
yes,
quitting and removing yourself from a situation that does not serve you is sometimes the brave, courageous, smart move.
Yeah.
And it feels shitty, but sometimes you gotta do it.
Especially if, like, again, especially if, I mean, there's always going to be repercussions of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to be quite frank, these people were not great to me when I tried to remove myself. They would tag me in stories of them hanging out. They would.
Tisk, tisk, tisk.
And, like, my dad was in the hospital the whole time, so it did not help.
The audacity, honestly.
It's tough.
She's being a nice girl right now.
Anyways.
It's Time to Go by Taylor Swift. I'm kidding.
It is actually. Oh,
it is called
anyways,
Time
here's,
to Go.
It is actually called that?
It's Time to Go.
Walking out is the one thing. Well, that will find you the right thing. Sometimes giving up is the strong thing. Okay, wait, we're going to get sued. We're going to get sued.
No, we won't. Okay,
she doesn't know we exist. It's fine. I can't believe that you played it to the exact right moment.
It was perfect.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Okay, well, we'll figure out if we're cutting this or not. We'll figure out. But
maybe it'll be Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't have a Patreon. I'll make a Patreon, and just this will be on Patreon.
Just for that 30-second splice of the podcast.
30-second chaotic splice.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like there's, like I was saying, there can be repercussions for taking this. And I think that's why partially I was so gradual to finally kind of accept that I wanted to move on from being this nice girl people pleaser, because the second there was a repercussion, I would use it as evidence or fuel against acting this way, against, you know, being who I wanted to be. I would be like, look, here's why I shouldn't just be myself, because people don't like it, or people are going to be mad at me for XYZ. And still now I still very much struggle with this. It takes me a while to let go of things, not hating people, but internally grappling with, there has to be something. Did I do something wrong? There has to be something more than the facts that I know. Did I do something even more egregious to make you act this way? Or did I say something awful that I didn't mean to say? Mm-hmm. It's something like that, that I take it internally.
Yeah.
I know my mom would like never really punish me, because anytime that I would make a mistake, she was like, whatever you'd say about yourself, I could never say.
Stop. I can't relate any, like, that's so relatable for me.
Yeah.
Like, if I ever did anything bad as a child or like adolescent, you know,
mm-hmm.
no punishment from the parents, because I'm punishing myself.
Yeah. Like, truly, my parents would have to tame me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would be like, I'm grounded, I hate myself, blah, 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 blah. And they're like, it's a mistake.
Yeah.
It's okay to make mistakes, mm-hmm. just don't do it again. But they would never have to say anything, because they'd be like, you're going to say something 80 times worse than what we would ever say to you.
Yeah. I wonder if there's research out there on that, right? That idea of like really hypersensitive individuals. I mean, I'm sure we talked about this before, but like people pleasers, especially women, highly empathetic, highly sensitive. The reason why you're taking things out on yourself and ultimately trying to please others is because you don't want to hurt other people. You want to keep them comfortable. The worst case scenario for me in a social situation is in like invoking anxiety in whoever I'm with.
Yeah.
Like, I want them to be like, it's okay if I'm incredibly uncomfortable and anxious, but everybody else has to feel at ease.
Well, and you think like it's a cliche example, but the person that, like, I'm always called the hostess with the mostest. Mm. Like, I am the type of person who at my own wedding, I would have a terrible time if one person isn't having fun,
mm-hmm.
because I am constantly reading everyone else's emotion. And I did a whole thing about my birthday, mm-hmm. about how my birthday has always been, if one person,
mm-hmm.
isn't having fun at my birthday, I will have a bad time because I failed them.
Yeah.
And it very much, it's that viewpoint of, I am willing, I used to frame it of like, well, I'm willing to take on that discomfort. They may not be ready for it, or they may not want to, but I'm willing to take on that discomfort if it means that they're happy.
Yeah.
And they aren't. So it's okay, because I'm willing to take that on. And it's the same thing of like, I'm willing to carry the weight of the world on my shoulder,
mm-hmm.
if it makes them okay, because I'm okay with that. I'm willing to do that.
Yeah.
That's still not okay. That's still not you changing who you are, you taking on more than you need to make someone else more comfortable. That's a disservice to both of you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not serving anyone, because also they're starting to like someone, friendship, relationship, that isn't actually you.
Yeah. I'm thinking right now, I'm like 27 Dresses. Do you know this movie?
Oh, yeah.
One of the best, where so good. The little sister, I don't remember her name, but she's like lying to this man and like telling him all the things he wants to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Not a great foundation for any long-lasting relationship. And it ultimately does, spoiler alert, like, you know, crash and burn.
See the movie.
But yeah, everybody watch 27 Dresses.
Oh, I mean, that's People Pleaser 101.
Yeah.
Is that movie. And that's definitely, I think that was something I had to grapple with when I started realizing that I was a nice girl, was no, I wasn't doing anything to that extreme. I wasn't straight up lying to anyone, mm-hmm. about, you know, who I am, my profession, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
it was so little, and I was gaslighting myself, essentially. Really?
There's a lot of gaslighting that goes into this.
Yeah.
A ton.
That's
very complex gaslighting.
Very, very complex gaslighting, where if you tell yourself enough times, I like this, I like this, I like this, you're going to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
With so many different scenarios in life, it would happen to me. It would be as little as like working out, mm-hmm, to as big as I like this person.
Mm-hmm.
But it was always to fit a story or a narrative that I thought was correct.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was always to fit what I thought was what I should be doing, what I should be liking, whatever context it was.
Yeah.
And you really are gaslighting yourself. So you can't even, when someone says, like, are you being real to who you are? You think you are.
Yeah.
But when you actually step back, when you have that disassociating, you're like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Looking at yourself from the outside in.
It's like looking at pictures.
Scary, but
years
necessary.
Ago, and you're like, why did I think that this was a good outfit? But it's your literal whole personality.
Yeah.
You're like, why did I think this was okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, friends. So we've covered lots today. And Judy and I could honestly talk for hours. And actually, that's exactly what we ended up doing. So we chose to split this up to make it a two-parter for you guys. So please check back next week to hear the rest of Judy and I's conversation about rediscovering yourself after you kind of, you know, start standing up for yourself, and this identity formation that comes a little bit later in life and a little bit more difficultly for people pleasers like us. So I can't wait for you guys to hear the rest of our conversation. Please be sure to follow on TikTok and Instagram at Not Nice Girl Pod, and rate, review, and subscribe. Thanks, guys. Talk soon.